Good morning. You are listening to KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine. I'm Janine, and this is Get the Funk Out. Hope your week is going well so far. It is Wednesday, June 25th, and I'm so excited to have award-winning author Heather Clark standing by. She's going to share her stunning debut novel. It's the story of an intense first love, haunted by history and family memory. It's actually inspired by the startling World War II scrapbook of Clark's own grandfather, hidden in an attic until after his death. Heather Clark is with us now to talk about the scrapbook. Good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
How does it feel, Heather, to finally have this book out in the world?
Well, it feels great. You know, it's been simmering for a long time. Mm-hmm. I actually started this book in the late 90s and then put it aside for about 25 years. So, yeah, it's a bit surreal to see it out in the world. I wrote most of it in 2023, though.
So a question for you, Heather. Why did it take you 25 years? Was it just so emotional? Was it just so time-consuming? What was it?
Well, life got busy, right?
Mm-hmm. That happens.
I wrote a lot of fiction in my 20s, fiction
sure.
and poetry, and then I got an academic job, and I had to write books for tenure, mm-hmm. and I sort of went down the nonfiction path, and then Red Comet, my biography of Sylvia Plath, took me almost 10 years to write.
Whoa.
It's over 1,000 pages, so that was a real labor of love, but... You know, after my grandfather died in 2015, my grandmother brought his wartime scrapbook out of where it had been.
Okay.
After his funeral. And so that's when I saw these wartime photos that he had taken at Dachau, the concentration camp.
Mm.
And he'd been part of a unit that helped liberate the camp. And I had known this. I had known he'd been at Dachau, but he never talked about it. And it was, you know... not something we brought up. So when I saw these photos, I was haunted, and I just thought, okay, it's time to finish that book I started so
yes.
long ago, and I kind of saw a way forward at that point.
Fantastic. And how does it feel to be featured in the New York Times and the Boston Globe and all over the place?
Yeah, I mean, it was a surprise to me, but I think this story is resonating with mm-hmm. readers. I'm getting a lot of messages from children and grandchildren of
really?
Men who helped liberate the camps.
Okay.
And they say, my father never spoke about it either. My grandfather never spoke about it either. And this kind of sense of wounds mm-hmm. that were not addressed, you know, after the war. I mean, this
sure.
was the greatest generation. But I think they carried a lot with them when they came home, these men who
mm-hmm.
were in Germany in the Pacific.
A lot of trauma.
Yeah, a lot of trauma. And we won the war, right? So we
yeah.
didn't want to talk too much about that. But, you know, I think they took home a lot of wounds.
So the scrapbook has been called a different kind of World War II novel. How is that?
Yeah, it's not a typical World War II novel because it's really about the legacy of the war and the afterlife of the war.
Mm-hmm.
It is mainly about two young lovers, Anna and Christoph, whose grandfathers fought on opposite sides of World War II, on the American side and the German side.
Mm-hmm.
And so the novel intertwines Anna and Christoph's present-day love affair with flashbacks to the wartime experiences of their grandfathers in the 1940s. So the novel operates on dual timelines, and it's about inheritances and the weight of history. Anna falls in love with Christoph as she's about to graduate from college. He's a visiting German student, and she decides she's going to try to make this relationship work, and she follows him to Germany. And he takes her around to all of these places that have this great historical weight, and they kind of stumble into this confrontation with a brutal German history. And he takes her to Nuremberg and Munich and Heidelberg, and they start out sightseeing, and then all of a sudden, you know, they're at the courthouse in Nuremberg where the Nazi trials took place, right?
Mm-hmm.
So they keep coming up against this brutal German history, and throughout the book, one of the questions is, you know, what did Christoph's grandfather really do in the war? And what really happened to Anna's grandfather? And can this relationship sort of survive
mm-hmm.
This encounter with with the Third Reich and with the true family and collective history.
That's so powerful. How did you manage to integrate your grandfather's backstory into this story?
I'm a biographer and a literary critic by training. I'm a poetry scholar. Mm-hmm. And I've looked at a lot of scrapbooks, right? Writing my biography of Plath and other books. And I always had this very professional distance when I went into an archive and looked through a scrapbook. I had my biographer hat on, but this was different. This was my family. This was my own history.
Sure.
So I didn't want to approach it in that kind of distant, nonfiction, professional way. I decided to write a novel. It's very much a novel, but there's autobiographical scaffolding and his story. I wanted to get his testimony into this novel.
Okay.
He was an eyewitness, right, at Dachau. He took photos. These are documents of war. This is documentary evidence of war crimes.
Sure.
And so with this growing rise of Holocaust denial, I just wanted to get some of that story into this novel. So there is a section in the book where I quote his words directly, verbatim, from the one interview he gave about what it was like to be at Dachau on that day. And I didn't want to make that up. So
sure.
Even though it's very much a novel, it's sort of like biography colliding with fiction, in a sense, because that is what I do.
Did you have a relationship where you would sit and talk to him for hours when he was alive? Did you ever record a conversation with him or anything?
No. I mean, we did talk a lot. He loved history and mm-hmm. politics. He was very, very intelligent. He was an autodidact, a voracious reader. But no, we stayed away from the war. And you just didn't want to bring it up.
Of course.
You knew that this was off limits,
I guess,
is what, even as
yes.
a child, I sort of knew that as a teenager. So no, never. But my aunt did record one interview with him where she asked him about this because she understood this is important history, right? We need to get this down. So he talked a little bit about it then, but even in that interview, he doesn't, he doesn't really want to talk about it.
Sure.
Well, and he said he didn't even want to watch Saving Private Ryan because he felt like it was too heroic. You know, the themes in that movie were too heroic.
It wasn't realistic with his life.
Yeah. He did say, when I was in the war, it was just, I was cold, I was tired, mm-hmm. I was dirty, I was afraid.
Yeah.
And, there was no sense of heroism there. And these guys, they were so young that going into Dachau and Bergen-Belsen, and they didn't know what they were walking into. He said that's another thing he said in this interview. They had no clue. The army hadn't told them a thing. Their superiors, they just didn't know.
I can't even imagine.
Yeah.
And they were 18, 19, 20.
Yeah. And now we have a frame of reference for the Holocaust, right? We understand. We have this historical reference, but they didn't. And so just trying to imagine what that does to your psyche, I mm-hmm. suppose, as a young
sure.
young GI encountering that. And so I had a lot of compassion for him after I saw the photos, and I did a lot of research. I went to Germany to research this novel. I tried to follow in his footsteps as much as I could.
Okay.
Visiting these sites, Dachau, Berchtesgaden, Munich. And I have a lot of compassion for what those men went through.
That's a wonderful journey as a writer to go back to where he was.
Yeah, because there was a list in the scrapbook. It was an official army list of all the places that they marched through. So I had that primary document, that evidence,
mm-hmm.
and I didn't go to all the places. There were too many, but I did try to go to some of the places that are in my novel. And it's very strange now. If you go to Berchtesgaden, if you go to what's called the Eagle's Nest, this is Hitler's. It was built for his 50th birthday. Hitler's house. It was not bombed during the war. So, but now it's been turned into a restaurant.
Really?
And it's just a very strange experience.
That's
it's at the summit of this mountain in the southern tip of Bavaria, beautiful views of the surrounding Alps. But it just feels, it felt unsettling to me to be there. Yes. And people are drinking beer and wine.
I agree.
And there is a part of the restaurant with photos and a wall kind of telling you about the history, but it's just a strange experience.
I would have a hard time with that.
Yeah, and that's something I deal with in the novel, as they go around to some of these places. Like, what do you do? What mm-hmm. do you do with these old Nazi spaces? Do you make them all into museums, or do you reclaim them? Or, mm-hmm. you know, I don't have an answer, but it's something that comes up in the book.
Sure.
How do you remember?
Yeah.
Right? How do you memorialize?
What was the process like writing this book? Because I know you started it a while ago. I mean, how did you know when you had reached the end?
Yeah, so I started the book so long ago, as I say, in the late 90s, and it was sort of, I spent time in Germany in the late 90s, and again, I was unsettled by this sense that, where are the war memorials? Where, I felt like I was sitting in these cities, and everything had been rebuilt, and everything was sparkling and new, and old, even the old town, right, wherever I was, had been rebuilt to look exactly like the former old town had looked before the war. But of course, all of these cities had been rubble mm-hmm. 50 years before. And it just was a kind of unsettling feeling. Now, if you go to Germany, there's many, many memorials, right? But it wasn't necessarily like that in the mid-90s. The reckoning hadn't really started yet. So the book started as a kind of, it started out like that. And then after I saw my grandfather's scrapbook, I just saw a way to kind of connect the two plots. Momentum had stalled, and then I just wrote the whole thing in a year. I went to Germany, and and that propelled me on imaginatively.
Amazing.
Going to the real places.
Of course,
it was a very important part of the process.
It was like you had
a
mission.
I don't speak German. I'm not an expert in German history or anything like that. But
Well, I guess it was also your way of getting closer to your grandfather.
Yeah, I think it was. And as a biographer, that is sort of my instinct, right, is to go down the rabbit hole, mm-hmm. get the story, what really happened. So part of the process was informed by that and my experience as a nonfiction writer. But on the other hand, I almost had to stop myself because I know, I could have spent years in military archives, and I didn't want to do that, actually. I didn't want to write the quote-unquote the real story. Mm-hmm. The character kind of inspired by my grandfather is really a fictional character, and I read a lot of soldier memoirs, and I kind of based his experience on things that I read. I had to cut myself off at some point and say, no, you're a novelist. Don't, you don't need to track down the real story. You can make this up. And that was liberating after writing 1,000 pages about Sylvia Plath.
Oh, I bet.
With 200 pages of footnotes, right?
Oh my gosh.
It was liberating, yeah.
If you're just tuning in, I'm speaking with Heather Clark, who has a debut novel, The Story of an Intense First Love Haunted by History and Family Memory. It's inspired by her scrapbook of her grandfather's, her late grandfather's, hidden in the attic until after his death. It's called The Scrapbook. All your information, by the way, is up on the show blog, which is getthefunkoutshow.kuci.org. Let's talk about writing for people that are listening who are, they aspire to write a novel like this. Like, how did you first get started in writing? Was it something you did as a child?
Yes. Yeah. I've been writing my whole life. Since, I don't know. I mean, I have stories that I wrote in first grade and
cute.
I just always wrote and always wanted to write, always wanted to be a writer. So it was a sense of vocation. I wrote a lot of fiction. But then I became an academic. I wanted to get an MFA, but I thought, how am I going to pay the bills with an MFA, right? I just didn't have that kind of confidence. I thought, at least if I get a PhD, I can become a professor and pay the bills, which is sort of ironic because English departments are closing all over the country now. But I think we can talk ourselves out of it very easily.
Yes.
think, well, you know, I certainly did for a long time. Oh, no, I shouldn't go back to that. I'm a biographer. But I think we can be our own worst critic and our own worst enemy. And I
Definitely.
Think we really have to fight that voice inside our head saying, no, you can't really do this, or you're not allowed to do this. Just do it. Just
Exactly.
sit down at your desk
Yeah.
and start with a page a day, right?
Exactly.
I mean, start small doses, small batches, and see what comes out.
Yeah.
And
no,
just
great
let yourself
advice.
Just let yourself go. You might get two sentences that you like, but then the next day you do it again, and then the pages add up really quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Even a page a day, it adds up quickly. So
well, and that's great advice. And you said something earlier on, you were working on something else and this idea came to you, and a lot of times I find that we'll be working on a script and then all of a sudden I get an idea for something else.
Yes.
And I'm like, why aren't I just focused on this one thing? But that's what happens. You have to kind of, and then just jot it down. Like, take some time, you know, flush that
yep.
out and then put it away and then wrap up the first thing. And then you can go back to the new idea.
Yeah. And, you know, my publisher, nobody knew I was writing this novel.
Really?
I just did it. Yeah. I'm supposed to be working on another nonfiction book, which I finished. But
okay.
My editor was a bit shocked when when my agent presented her with this novel. That's the other thing. I didn't want to tell anyone about it because I didn't want to put that pressure on myself, right? I think
right.
that's another good idea, is like, just keep it private. Keep it to yourself.
Yes.
It's your own thing. And that, yeah, that helps. I think that helps give you a sense of freedom. Like, well, I don't have to publish this, or I don't have to.
Exactly.
Just do it. Just play with it, right?
Yeah. You know what's interesting, too? I found out, you know, when things happen to us in life and we write them down, maybe it's a journal, that could turn into something. Even if you let it sit for 20 years, right, you can come back to that and sometimes you will have forgotten all those details, but just capturing something in the moment and not planning to do anything, as you said, not publishing, not worrying about submitting it, but just maybe doing it, even if it's a form of healing.
Yes. Yes. And this book is a perfect example of that, of something that I went back to that I wrote almost 20 years ago, and I hadn't looked at it in 20 years.
Mm.
And I read it over, and it wasn't, I had only written about 30 or 40 pages, but I thought, wait a minute, this is okay.
There's something here. Yeah.
Yeah. I was going somewhere with this. And so I think it is good to revisit things we've written in the past.
Mm-hmm.
And it can be a form of healing. I mean, what I said to myself was, I don't need to publish this, but I just want to finish it. I just want to finish what I started and have it in my possession, in my papers. I want to know that I wrote this book,
yeah.
and it's important to me personally. So I think starting from there, just having the sense of a goal that you achieve for yourself, I mean, that's all it has to be.
Yes. And there's no pressure in that.
Yeah.
Zero
yeah.
pressure. Which probably allowed you the freedom to just know you weren't under deadline.
Exactly.
There was no editor saying, come on, you know, let's go, Heather. Where are your pages?
Yeah.
And then you're thinking, is that right? Should I put that in there? You know? Yeah, that's beautiful.
Uh-huh. Yeah, there's a lot of freedom. In fact, my editor said, she made a joke. She said, you cheated on your nonfiction with your fiction.
That's cute.
which was sort of true, right? I would sneak away. I'm writing a group biography right now of Sylvia Plath, Anne Sexton, Adrienne Rich, and Maxine Cuman in Boston in the late 50s. But I would sort of sneak away from that and work on the novel and then go back to that.
Is that funny?
So I think it is. It's nice to work on two different things as well. You know, I think we can work on different things at the same time. They feed each other in interesting ways.
I think so.
We don't always have to stay in our lane, right?
No, not at all.
We can branch out.
Well, and the funny thing is, let's say you're struggling with that Sylvia Plath book, right? But you have
uh-huh.
something else on the side. You take that break, you work on that something else, and then you have this aha moment coming back to that Sylvia Plath book.
Absolutely. That happens so many times
mm-hmm.
with the scrapbook and my group biography. They informed each other in such kind of serendipitous and unexpected ways. And again, you know, I'm a storyteller. Doesn't matter if I'm writing nonfiction or fiction. I have to keep the reader turning the pages. I have to tell a story that I think is important. And that doesn't change. That's across the board, whatever genre.
Yeah, that's fantastic. So tell me, what's next for you?
So I am heading to Europe this weekend.
Ooh.
For
nice.
The European part of the book tour. So I'm taking this book to Germany, which should be interesting.
Okay.
And Amsterdam, London, Ireland, Prague. And then I submit my next nonfiction book to my editor in the fall. So,
okay.
Yeah, that's another class-related book. And I'm also working on a biography of the American poet Anne Sexton.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah,
wow.
So lots of projects going on.
And your editor's going to say, so, what were you working on? What else were you working on when you were writing this one?
Yeah. And there may be another novel in the works. We'll see.
Okay.
You never know.
When is your best writing time of day? Do you have one?
I think in the morning.
Me too. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, so many people say that. And that for me, that's true. I start to lose steam in the afternoon. And then, you know, my kids would come home from school.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's all over, right?
Oh, forget it. At night?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, sort of 9 to 2 or 9 to 3-ish, if I'm lucky enough to have a full day.
Yeah, that's a good chunk of time.
Yeah, it is. And
yeah.
I was, you know, teaching for a long time. So those were, I think when you have a day job, it forces you to be so much more
disciplined.
Productive. You try to be more productive because you don't take that time for granted, right? Where you can sit at your computer for 3 hours. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
And so you said you're tenured?
I do not teach anymore. I'm emerita. I'm Professor Emerita. I quit my day job. I was commuting to a university in England, and I decided not to do that anymore.
Commuting to England.
Yeah, the things we do to stay in academia. Oof. I know it's wild, but
commuting from New York. Commuting from New York.
From New York. Oh. Yeah.
What a
life.
And now
I'm just writing full time, which is great.
Well, that's wonderful.
I feel really lucky.
That's great. How can people find out more about you?
They can go to my website, HeatherClarkAuthor.com, and that's got all my book tour dates and more information about the books I've written and reviews and articles and interviews. And I write a lot of other things, poetry criticism and book reviews and that sort.
Okay. And your full tour schedule, you said, will be up there as well?
Yes. Yeah, that's all there.
That's exciting.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Well, yeah, because I released Red Comet during the pandemic, so it's just been wonderful to engage with readers and actually sign books this time around.
I love that. I know, that was such an interesting time, and I know that people that are writers, people would say, so you must be writing so much, you're so creative and loving this time of isolation. I don't know.
Yeah, it was tough, and I had little kids at home, so that was, oof.
Then your time of writing was like 6 a.m. to 8 a.m.
Yes, exactly. It's like all I did was homeschool, I felt like, for a year and a half. So,
Wow. Yeah,
it's a much nicer experience.
Well, that's great.
Around.
No wonder why you're getting back to all these projects and cranking out all these things and, you know.
Yep.
That's great. That's fantastic.
Yep.
Well, congratulations, Heather, and I've really enjoyed this conversation. I've been chatting with Heather Clark about the scrapbook, and all the information is on my show blog. Again, that's getthefunkoutshow.kuci.org. Thanks for calling in.
Thanks for having me.
Take care. Good luck on your tour.
Thanks.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
If you missed any part of my conversation with Heather Clark, it will be up as a podcast within an hour after I wrap. And there's a whole bunch of links on my show blog. She's gotten some fantastic accolades. She's in People Magazine's June Pick. There's a link to that. There's the cover of Publishers Weekly. Links to New York Times piece they did on Heather. And also an essay in the Boston Globe. Again, that's up on the show blog. And a full description of Heather's backstory and what she does now. And more information about the scrapbook. She's got a tremendous amount of accolades coming in for this book that just came out, so that's fantastic. You are listening to KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine. We'll take a little break and then we'll be back. I'm Janine, and this is Get the Funk Out. The opinions and views expressed in this program do not reflect those of KUCI, its management, or the UC Board of Regents. To find out more about this talk show or other talk shows broadcasting on KUCI, log on to our website at kuci.org or check out the latest program guide.